suddenly short of breath. This was what fearing death truly felt like, not my initial submission to it. I leaned away, holding up my Aedan. I was sitting on my bed, its red covers making me think of blood. There was nowhere to go.
That shame is the only reason you are alive, it said.
Your Okoko is better, I whispered, pointing at the tentacle. Won't you spare me for curing that? I could barely breathe. When it didn't respond, I asked, why? Oh, maybe there is no reason.
You think we are like you humans? It asked angrily. We don't kill for sport or even for gain, only for purpose.
I frowned. They sounded like the same thing to me, gain and purpose.
In your university, in one of its museums, placed on display like a piece of rare meat, is the stinger of our chief, it said.
I wrinkled my face, but said nothing.
Our chief is...
It paused.
We know of the attack and mutilation of our chief, but we do not know how it got there. We do not care. We will land on Unza Uni and take it back. So you see, we have purpose.
It billowed out gas and left the room. I lay back in my bed, exhausted. But they brought me more food and water. Okwu brought it, and it sat with me while I ate and drank. More fish and some dried up dates and a flask of water. This time I barely tasted it as I ate.
It's suicide, I said. What is suicide?
It asked.
What you are doing, I said. On Umsa Uni, there's a city where all the students and professors do is study, test, create weapons. Weapons for taking every form of life. Your own weapons were probably made there.
Our weapons are made within our bodies, it said.
What of the current killer you used against the Kush in the Medus-Kush War?
I asked. It said nothing.
Suicide is death on purpose.
Medus aren't afraid of death, it said. And this would be honorable. We will show them never to dishonor Medus again. Our people will remember our sacrifice and celebrate. I have an idea,
I shouted. My voice cracked. I pushed forward.
Let me talk to your chief, I shrieked.
I don't know if it was the delicious fish I'd eaten, shock, hopelessness, or exhaustion. I stood up and stepped to it, my legs shaky and my eyes wild.
Let me. I'm a master harmonizer. That's why I'm going to Umsa Uni. I am the best of the best, Okwu. I can create harmony anywhere.
I was so out of breath that I was wheezing. I inhaled deeply, seeing stars explode before my eyes.
Let me be. Let me speak for the Medus. The people in Umsa Uni are academics, so they'll understand honor and history and symbolism and matters of the body.
I didn't know any of this for sure. These were only my dreams and my experience of those on the ship.
Now you speak of suicide, for the both of us, it said.
Please, I said, I can make your chief listen.
Our chief hates humans, Okwu said. Humans took his stinger. Do you know what?
I'll give you a jar of my Ojize, I blurted. You can put it all over your... on every Okwoku, your dome. Who knows? It might make you glow like a star, or give you superpowers, or sting harder and faster, or we don't like stinging.
Please, I begged, imagine what you will be. Imagine if my plan works. You'll get the stinger back, and none of you will have died. You'll be a hero. And I get to live, I thought.
We don't care about being heroes.
But its pink tentacle twitched when it said this. The Medu's ship was docked beside the third fish. I'd walked across the large chitinous corridor linking them, ignoring the fact that the chances of my returning were very low. Their ship stank. I was sure of it, even if I couldn't smell it through my breather. Everything about the Medu's stank. I could barely concentrate on the spongy blue surface beneath my bare feet, or the cool gases Okwu promised would not harm my flesh, even though I could not breathe it. Or the Medu's, some green, some blue, some pink, moving on every surface, floor, high ceiling, wall, or stopping and probably staring at me with whatever they stared with. Or the current-connected Adon I still grasped in my hands. I was doing equations in my head. I needed everything I had to do what I was about to do. The room was so enormous that it felt almost as if we were outside. Almost. I'm a child of the desert. Nothing indoors can feel like the outdoors to me. But this room was huge. The chief was no bigger than the others, no more colorful. It had no more tentacles than the others. It was surrounded by other Medus. It looked so much like those around it that Okwu had to stand beside it to let me know who it was. The current from the Adan was going crazy, branching out in every direction, bringing me their words. I should have been terrified. Okwu had told me that requesting a meeting like this with the chief was risking not only my life, but Okwu's life as well. For the chief hated human beings, and Okwu had just begged to bring one into their great ship. Spongy, as if it were full of the firm jelly beads in the milky pudding my mother liked to make, I could sense current all around me. These people had deep, active technology built into the walls, and many of them had it running within their very bodies. Some of them were walking astrolabes. It was part of their biology. I adjusted my face mask. The air that it pumped in smelled like desert flowers. The makers of the mask had to have been Kush women. They liked everything to smell like flowers, even their privates. But at the moment, I could have kissed those women, for as I gazed at the chief, the smell of flowers burst into my nose and mouth, and suddenly I was imagining the chief hovering in the desert, surrounded by the dry, sweet-smelling flowers that only bloomed at night. I felt calm. I didn't feel at home, because in the part of the desert that I knew, only tiny, scentless flowers grew. But I sensed earth. I slowly stopped treeing, my mind clean and clear, but much stupider. I needed to speak, not act, so I had no choice. I held my chin up and then did as Okwu instructed me. I sunk to the spongy floor. Then right there, within the ship that brought the death of my friends, the boy I was coming to love, my fellow Umsa Yuni human citizens from Earth, before the one who had instructed its people to perform Mujha Kibira, also called the great wave of death on my people, still grasping the Adan. I prostrated. I pressed my face to the floor. Then I waited. This is Binti Ekupara Zuzudambu Kapka of Namib. The one who survives,
Okwu said. You may just call me Binti, I whispered, keeping my head down. My first name was singular and two-syllabled like Orkwu's name, and I thought maybe it would please the chief.
Tell the girl to sit up, the chief said. If there is the slightest damage to the ship's flesh because of this one, I will have you executed first, Okwu, then this creature. Binti,
Okwu said. His voice was hard, flat.
Get up.
I shut my eyes. I could feel the Aedon's current working through me, touching everything, including the floor beneath me, and I could hear it, the floor. It was singing, but not words, just humming. Happy and aloof. It wasn't paying attention. I pushed myself up and leaned back on my knees. Then I looked at where my chest had been, still a deep blue. I looked up at the chief. My people are the creators and builders of astrolabes, I said. We use math to create the currents within them. The best of us have the gift to bring harmony so delicious that we can make atoms caress each other like lovers. That's what my sister said. I blinked as it came to me. I think that's why this Aedon works for me. I found it in the desert. A wild woman there once told me that it is a piece of old technology. She called it a god stone. I didn't believe her then, but I do now. I've had it for 5 years, but it only worked for me now. I pounded my chest. For me. On that ship full of you, after you'd all done that. Let me speak for you. Let me speak to them, so no more have to die. I lowered my head, pressing my Aedon to my belly, just as Okwu told me. I could hear others behind me. They could have stung me 1,000 times.
You know what they have taken from me? The chief asked.
Yes, I said, keeping my head down.
My stinger is my people's power, it said. They took it from us. That's an act of war.
My way will get your stinger back, I quickly said. Then I braced myself for the rough stab in the back. I felt the sharpness press against the nape of my neck. I bit my lower lip to keep from screaming.
Tell your plan,
Okwu said. I spoke fast. The pilot gets us cleared to land. Then I leave the ship with one of you to negotiate with Umza Yuni to get the stinger back, peacefully.
That will take our element of surprise, the chief said. You know nothing about strategy.
If you attack, you will kill many. But then they will kill you, all of you, I said. Ah! I hissed as the stinger pointed at my neck was pressed harder against my flesh. Please, I'm just...
Chief, Binti doesn't know how to speak,
Okwu said.
Binti is uncivilized. Forgive it, it is young, a girl.
How can we trust it?
The Medus beside the chief asked Okwu.
What would I do? I asked, my face squeezed with pain. Run?
I wiped tears from my face. I wiped and wiped, but they kept coming. The nightmare kept happening.
You people are good at hiding,
another Medus sneered.
Especially the females like you.
Several of the Medus, including the chief, shook their tentacles and vibrated their domes in a clear display of laughter.
let Vinti put down the Edan, Oku said.
I stared at Oku, astonished. What?
Put it down, it said. You will be completely vulnerable. How can you be our ambassador if you need that to stay safe from us?
It's what allows me to hear you, I shrieked, and it was all I had.
The chief whipped up one of its tentacles, and every single medusa in that enormous room stopped moving. They stopped as if the very currents of time stopped. Everything stopped as it does when things get so cold that they become ice. I looked around, and when none of them moved, slowly, carefully, I dragged myself inches forward and turned to see the medusa behind me. Its stinger was up, at the height of where my neck had been. I looked at Oku, who said nothing, then at the chief. I lowered my eyes. Then I ventured another look, keeping my head low.
Choose, the chief said.
My shield. My translator. I tried to flex the muscles in my hands. I was greeted with sharp, intense pain. It had been over 3 days. We were 5 hours from Umzayuni. I tried again. I screamed. The Edan pulsed a bright blue deep within its blackened grey crevices, lighting up its loops and swirls, like one of the bioluminescent snails that invaded the edges of my home's lake. When my left index finger pulled away from the Edan, I couldn't hold the tears back. The Edan's blue-white glow blurred before my eyes. My joints popped and the muscles spasmed. Then my middle finger and pinky pulled away. I bit my lip so hard that I tasted blood. I took several quick breaths and then flexed every single one of my fingers at the same time. All of my joints went crack. I heard 1,000 wasps in my head. My body went numb. The Edan fell from my hands. Right before my eyes, I saw it, and I wanted to laugh. The blue current I'd conjured danced before me. The definition of harmony made from chaos. There was a soft pop as the Edan hit the floor, rolled twice, then stopped. I had just killed myself. My head grew heavy, and all went black. The medus were right. I could not have represented them if I was holding the Edan. This was Umzayuni. Someone there would know everything there was to know about the Edan, and thus its toxicity to the medus. No one at Umzayuni would have really believed I was their ambassador, unless I let go. Death. When I left my home, I died. I had not prayed to the Seven before I left. I didn't think it was time. I had not gone on my pilgrimage like a proper woman. I was sure I'd return to my village as a full woman to do that. I had left my family. I thought I could return to them when I'd done what I'd needed to do. Now I could never go back. The medus are not what we humans think. They are truth. They are clarity. They are decisive. There are sharp lines and edges. They understand honor and dishonor. I had to earn their honor, and the only way to do that was by dying a second time. I felt the stinger plunge into my spine just before I blacked out, and just after I'd conjured up the wild line of current that I guided to the Edan. It was a terrible pain. Then I left. I left them. I left that ship.
I could hear the ship singing its half-word song, and I knew it was singing to me. My last thought was to my family, and I hoped it reached them. Home. I smelled the earth at the border of the desert just before it rained, during fertile season. The place right behind the root, where I dug up the clay I used for my ojize, and chased the geckos who were too fragile to survive a mile away in the desert. I opened my eyes. I was on my bed in my room, naked except for my wrapped skirt. The rest of my body was smooth with a thick layer of ojize. I flared my nostrils and inhaled the smell of me. Home. I sat up, and something rolled off my chest. It landed in my crotch, and I grabbed it. The Adan. It was cool in my hand, and all dull blue as it had been 4 years before. I reached behind and felt my back. The spot where the stinger had stabbed me was sore, and I could feel something rough and scabby there. It, too, was covered with ojize. My astrolabe sat on the curve of the window, and I checked my map and stared outside for a very long time. I grunted, slowly standing up. My foot hit something on the floor, my jar. I put the Adan down and picked it up, grasping it with both hands. The jar was more than half empty. I laughed, dressed, and stared out the window again. We were landing on Umza Yuni in an hour, and the view was spectacular. They did not come, not to tell me what to do or when to do it. So I strapped myself in the black landing chair beside the window and stared at the incredible sight expanding before my eyes. There were two suns, one that was very small and one that was large but comfortably far away. Hours of sunshine on all parts of the planet were far more than hours of dark. But there were few deserts on Umza Yuni. I used my astrolabe in binocular vision to see things up close. Umza Yuni is such a small planet compared to Earth. Only one-third water. Its lands were every shade of the rainbow, some parts blue, green, white, purple, red, white, black, orange, and some areas were smooth, others jagged with peaks that touched the clouds. And the area we were hurtling toward was orange, but interrupted by patches of the dense green of large forests of trees, small lakes, and the hard grey-blue forests of tall skyscrapers. My ears popped as we entered the atmosphere. The sky started to turn a light pinkish color, then red-orange. I was looking out from within a fireball. We were inside the air that was being ripped apart as we entered the atmosphere. There wasn't much shaking or vibrating, but I could see the heat generated by the ship. The ship would shed its skin the day after we arrived as it readjusted to gravity. We descended from the sky and zoomed between monstrously beautiful structures that made the skyscrapers of Earth look minuscule. I laughed wildly as we descended lower and lower. Down, down we fell. No military ships came to shoot us out of the sky. We landed, and moments after, smiling with excitement, I wondered if they would kill the pilot now that he was useless. I had not negotiated that with the Medus. I ripped off my safety belt and jumped up, and then fell to the floor. My legs felt like weights. What is? I heard a horrible noise, a low rumble that boiled to an angry-sounding growl. I looked around, sure there was a monster about to enter my room. But then I realized two things. Oku was standing in my doorway, and I understood what it was saying. I did as it said, and pushed myself into a sitting position, bringing my legs to my chest, I grasped the side of my bed and dragged myself up to sit on it.
Take your time,
Okwu said.
Your kind do not adjust quickly to Jadeveer.
You mean gravity? I asked.
Yes.
I slowly stood up. I took a step and looked at Okwu, then passed it at the empty doorway. Where are the others?
Waiting in the dining room.
The pilot? I asked.
In the dining room as well.
Alive?
Yes.
I sighed, relieved, and then paused. The sound of its speech vibrating against my skin. This was its true voice. I could not only hear at its frequency, but I saw its tentacles quiver as it spoke, and I could understand it. Before, it had just looked like their tentacles were quivering for no reason. Was it the sting? I asked.
No,
it said.
That is something else. You understand, because you truly are what you say you are. A harmonizer.
I didn't care to understand. Not at the moment. Your tentacle, I said, your okwoko. It hung straight, still pink, but now translucent like the others.
The rest was used to help several of our sick, it said. Your people will be remembered by my people.
The more it spoke, the less monstrous its voice sounded. I took another step.
Are you ready?
Okwu asked. I was. I left the Edan behind with my other things. I was still weak from the landing, but this had to happen fast. I don't know how they broke the news of their presence to Umzayuni authorities, but they must have. Otherwise, how would we be able to leave the ship during the brightest part of the day? I understood the plan as soon as Okwu and the chief came to my room. I followed them down the hallway. We did not pass through the dining room where so many had been brutally killed, and I was glad. But as we passed the entrance, I saw all the medus in there. The bodies were all gone. The chairs and tables were all stacked on one side of the large room, as if a windstorm had swept through it. Between the transparent folds and tentacles, I thought I glimpsed someone in the red flowing uniform of the pilot, but I wasn't sure.
You know what you will say,
the chief said. Not a question, but a statement. And within the statement, a threat. I wore my best red shirt and wrapper, made from the threads of well-fed silkworms. I'd bought it for the first day of class at Umzayuni, but this was a more important occasion. And I'd used fresh ujize on my skin and to thicken my plaited hair even more. As I'd palm-rolled my plaits, smooth like the bodies of snakes, I noticed that my hair had grown about an inch since I'd left home. This was odd. I looked at the thick, wiry new growth, admiring its dark brown color before pressing the ujize onto it, making it red. There was a tingling sensation on my scalp as I worked the ujize in, and my head ached. I was exhausted. I held my ujize-covered hands to my nose and inhaled the scent of home. Years ago, I had snuck out to the lake one night with some other girls, and we'd all washed and scrubbed off all our ujize using the lake's salty water. It took us half the night. Then we'd stared at each other, horrified by what we'd done. If any man saw us, we'd be ruined for life. If our parents saw us, we'd all be beaten, and that would be only a fraction of the punishment. Our families and people we knew
would think us mentally unstable when they heard, and that too would ruin our chances of marriage. But above all this, outside of their horror of what we'd done, we all felt an awesome, glorious shock. Our hair hung in thick clumps, black in the moonlight. Our skin glistened, dark brown, glistened. And there had been a breeze that night, and it felt amazing on our exposed skin. I thought of this as I applied the Ojize to my new growth, covering up the dark brown color of my hair. What if I washed it all off now? I was the first of my people to come to Umzayuni. Would the people here even know the difference? But Okwu and the chief came minutes later, and there was no time. Plus, really, this was Umzayuni. Someone would have researched and known of my people. And that person would know I was naked if I washed all my Ojize off. And crazy. I didn't want to do it anyway, I thought, as I walked behind Okwu and the chief. There were soldiers waiting at the doorway. Both were human, and I wondered what point they were trying to make by doing that. Just like the photos in the books I read, they wore all blue kaftans and no shoes.
You first,
the chief growled, moving behind me. I felt one of its tentacles, heavy and smooth, shove me softly in the back, right where I'd been stung. The soreness there caused me to stand up taller. And then more softly, in a voice that only tickled my ear with its strange vibration.
Look strong, girl.
Following the soldiers and followed by two medus, I stepped onto the surface of another planet for the first time in my life. My scalp was tingling, and this added to the magical sensation of being so far from home. The first thing I noticed was the smell and weight of the air when I walked off the ship. It smelled jungly, green, heavy with leaves. The air was full of water. It was just like the air in the ship's plant-filled breathing chambers. I parted my lips and inhaled it as I followed the soldiers down the open black walkway. Behind me I heard the medus pluming out and sucking in gas, softly though, unlike on the ship. We were walking toward a great building, the ship port.
We will take you to the Umzayuni presidential building,
one of the soldiers said to me in perfect Kush. He looked up at the medus, and I saw a crease of worry wrinkle his brow.
I don't know their language. Can you?
I nodded. He looked about 25 and was dark brown-skinned like me, but unlike the men of my people, his skin was naked, his hair shaven low. And he was quite short, standing a head shorter than me.
Do you mind swift transport?
I turned and translated for Okwu and the chief.
These people are primitive,
the chief responded. But it and Okwu agreed to board the shuttle. The room's wall and floor were a light blue, the large open windows letting in sunshine and a warm breeze. There were 10 professors, one from each of the 10 university departments. They sat, stood, hovered, and crouched behind a long table of glass. Against every wall were soldiers wearing blue uniforms of cloth, color, and light. There were so many different types of people in the room that I found it hard to concentrate. But I had to, or there would be more death. The one who spoke for all the professors looked like one of the sand people's gods, and I almost laughed. It was like a spider made of wind, gray and undulating, here and not quite there. When it spoke, it was in a whisper that I could clearly hear despite the fact that I was several feet away, and it spoke in the language of the Medus. It introduced itself as something that sounded like
Haras and said,
"Tell me what you need to tell me."
And then all attention was suddenly on me. "None of you have ever seen anyone like me," I said. "I come from a people who live near a small salty lake on the edge of a desert. On my people's land, fresh water, water humans can drink, is so little that we do not use it to bathe as so many others do. We wash with ojize, a mix of red clay from our land and oils from our local flowers." Several of the human professors looked at each other and chuckled. One of the large insect-type people clicked its mandibles. I frowned, flaring my nostrils. It was the first time I'd received treatment similar to the way my people were treated on Earth by the Kush. In a way, this set me at ease. People were people everywhere. The professors were just like anyone else. This was my first time leaving the home of my parents. I had never even left my own city, let alone my planet Earth. Days later, in the blackness of space, everyone on my ship but the pilot was killed. Many, right before my eyes, by a people at war with those who view my own people as near slaves. I waited for this to sink in, then continued. "You've never seen the Medus either, only studied them, from afar. I know. I have read about them too." I stepped forward. "Or maybe some of you or your students have studied the stinger you have in the Weapons Museum up close." I saw several of them look at each other. Some murmured to one another. Others, I did not know well enough to tell what they were doing. As I spoke, I fell into a rhythm, a meditative state, very much like my math-induced ones. Except I was fully present. And before long, tears were falling from my eyes. I told them in detail about watching Heru's chest burst open, desperately grabbing food, staying in that room waiting to die, the Edan saving me, and not knowing how or why or what. I spoke of Oku and how my Ojize had really been what saved me. I spoke of the Medusa's cold exactness, focus, violence, sense of honor, and willingness to listen. I said things that I didn't know I'd thought about or comprehended. I found words I didn't even know I knew. And eventually, I told them how they could satisfy the Medusa and prevent a bloodbath in which everyone would lose. I was sure they would agree. These professors were educated beyond anything I could imagine. Thoughtful, insightful, united, individual. The Medus chief came forward and spoke its piece as well. It was angry, but thorough, eloquent with a sterile logic. "If you do not give it to us willingly, we have the right to take back what was brutally stolen from us without provocation," the chief said. After the chief spoke, the professors discussed among themselves for over an hour. They did not retreat to a separate room to do this. They did it right before the chief, Oku, and me. They moved from the glass table and stood in a group. Oku, the chief, and I just stood there. Back in my home, the elders were always stoic and quiet, and they always discussed everything in private. It must have been the same for the Medus, because Oku's tentacles shuddered and it said, "What kind of people are these?" "Let them do the right thing," the chief said. Feet away from us, beyond the glass table, these professors were shouting with anger, sometimes guffawing with glee, flicking antennae in each other's faces, making ear-popping clicks to get the attention of colleagues. One professor, about the size of my head, flew from one part of the group to the other,
producing webs of gray light that slowly descended on the group. This chaotic method of madness would decide whether I would live or die. I caught bits and pieces of the discussion about Medu's history and methods, the mechanics of the third fish, the scholars who'd brought the stinger. Orku and the chief didn't seem to mind hovering there, waiting. However, my legs soon grew tired, and I sat down right there on the blue floor. Finally, the professors quieted and took their places at the glass table again. I stood up, my heart seeming to pound in my mouth, my palms sweaty. I glanced at the chief and felt even more nervous. Its okoko were vibrating, and its blue color was deeper, almost glowing. When I looked at Orku, where its okoku hung, I caught a glimpse of the white of its stinger, ready to strike. This spider-like Haras raised two front legs and spoke in the language of the Medus and said,
"On behalf of all the people of Umsa Uni, and on behalf of Umsa University, apologize for the actions of a group of our own in taking the stinger from you, Chief Medus. The scholars who did this will be found, expelled, and exiled. Museum specimens of such prestige are highly prized at our university. However, such things must only be acquired with permission from the people to whom they belong. Umsa protocol is based on honor, respect, wisdom, and knowledge. We will return it to you immediately."
My legs grew weak, and before I knew it, I was sitting back on the floor. My head felt heavy and tingly, my thoughts scattered. "I'm sorry," I said, in the language I'd spoken all my life. I felt something press my back, steadying me. "Orku." "I am all right," I said, pushing my hands to the floor and standing back up. But Orku kept a tentacle to my back. The one named Harris continued,
"Binti, you have made your people proud, and I'd personally like to welcome you to Umsa Uni."
It motioned one of its limbs toward the human woman beside it. She looked cush and wore tight-fitting green garments that clasped every part of her body, from neck to toe.
"This is Okpala. She is in our mathematics department. When you are settled, aside from taking classes with her, you will study Yoredan with her. According to Okpala, what you did is impossible."
I opened my mouth to speak, but Okpala put up a hand, and I shut my mouth.
"We have one request," Hara said. "We of Umsa Uni wish Okwu to stay behind as the first Medu student to attend the university. And as a showing of allegiance between Umsa Uni governments and the Medus, and a renewal of the pact between human and Medus."
I heard Okwu rumble behind me. Then the chief was speaking up.
"For the first time in my own lifetime, I am learning something completely outside of core beliefs," the chief said. "Who'd have thought that a place harboring human beings could carry such honor and foresight?"
It paused and then said,
"I will confer with my advisors before I make my decision."
The chief was pleased. I could hear it in his voice. I looked around me. No one from my tribe. At once, I felt both part of something historic and very alone. Would my family even comprehend it all when I explained it to them?
Or would they just fix it on the fact that I'd almost died, was now too far to return home, and had left them in order to make the biggest mistake of my life? I swayed on my feet, a smile on my face.
Binti, the one named Okpala said, what will you do now?
What do you mean? I asked. I want to study mathematics and currents, maybe create a new type of astrolabe. The Edan, I want to study that, and...
Yes, she said, that is true. But what about your home? Will you ever return?
Of course, I said. Eventually, I will visit, and I have studied your people, she said. They don't like outsiders. I am not an outsider, I said, with a twinge of irritation. I am... And that's when it caught my eye. My hair was rested against my back, weighed down by the ojize. But as I'd gotten up, one lock had come to rest on my shoulder. I felt it rub against the front of my shoulder, and I saw it now. I frowned, not wanting to move. Before the realization hit me, I knew to drop into meditation, treeing out of desperation. I held myself in there for a moment, equations flying through my mind like wind and sand. Around me I heard movement, and still treeing, I saw that the soldiers were leaving the room. The professors were getting up, talking among themselves in their various ways. All except Okpala. She was looking right at me. I slowly lifted up one of my locks and brought it forward. I rubbed off the ojize. It glowed a strong, deep blue, like the sky back on Earth on a clear day, like Okwu and so many of the other Medus, like the uniforms of the Umsa Uni soldiers. And it was translucent, soft but tough. I touched the top of my head and pressed. They felt the same, and I felt my hand touching them. The tingling sensation was gone. My hair was no longer hair. There was a ringing in my ear as I began to breathe heavily, still in meditation. I wanted to tear off my clothes and inspect every part of my body to see what else that sting had changed. It had not been a sting. A sting would have torn out my insides, as it did for Heru. Only those, Okwu said. Nothing else. This is why I understand you, I flatly asked. Talking while in meditation was like softly whispering from a hole deep in the ground. I was looking up from a cool, dark place. Yes.
Why?
Because you had to understand us, and it was the only way, Okwu said. And you needed to prove to them that you were truly our ambassador, not prisoner,
the chief said. It paused.
I will return to the ship. We will make our decision about Okwu.
It turned to leave and then turned back.
Binti, you will forever hold the highest honor among the Medus. My destiny is stronger for leading me to you.
Then it left. I stood there in my strange body. If I hadn't been deep in meditation, I would have screamed and screamed. I was so far from home.
I'm told that news of what had happened spread across all Umsa Uni within minutes. It was said that a human tribal female from a distant blue planet saved the university from Medus terrorists by sacrificing her blood and using her unique gift of mathematical harmony and ancestral magic. Tribal.
That's what they called humans from ethnic groups, too remote and uncivilized to regularly send students to attend Umza Uni. Over the next 2 days, I learned that people viewed my reddened, dark skin and strange hair with wonder. And when they saw me with Okwu, they grew tense and quiet, moving away. Where they saw me as a fascinating, exotic human, they saw Okwu as a dangerous threat. Okwu was of a warlike people who, up until now, had only been viewed with fear among people from all over. Okwu enjoyed its infamy, whereas I just wanted to find a quiet desert to walk into so I could study in peace.
All people fear decisive, proud honor,
Okwu proclaimed. We were in one of the Weapon City libraries, staring at the empty chamber where the chief stinger had been kept. A 3-hour transport from Math City, Weapon City was packed with activity on every street and crowded with sprawling flat gray buildings made of stone. Beneath each of these structures were inverted buildings that extended at least a half mile underground, where only those students, researchers, and professors involved knew what was being invented, tested, or destroyed. After the meeting, this was where they'd taken me, the chief, and Okwu, for the retrieval of the stinger. We'd been escorted by a person who looked like a small green child with roots for a head, who I later learned was the head professor of Weapon City. He was the one who went into the 5x5-foot case made of thick, clear crystal and opened it. The stinger was placed atop a slab of crystal and looked like a sharp tusk of ice. The chief slowly approached the case, extended an okwoko, and then let out a large bluish plume of gas the moment its okwoko touched the stinger. I'll never forget the way the chief's body went from blue to clear the moment the stinger became a part of it again. Only a blue line remained at the point of demarcation where it had reattached, a scar that would always remind it of what human beings of Umza Uni had done to it for the sake of research and academics. Afterward, just before the chief and the others boarded the third fish that would take them back to their own ship, just outside the atmosphere, upon Okwu's request, I knelt before the chief and placed its stinger on my lap. It was heavy, and it felt like a slab of solid water, and the edge at its tip looked like it could slice into another universe. I smeared a dollop of my ojize on the blue scar where it had reattached. After a minute, I wiped some of it away. The blue scar was gone. Their chief was returned to its full royal translucence. They had the half jar of otije Okwu had taken from me, which healed their flesh like magic, and they were leaving one of their own as the first medus to study at the great Umza University. The medus left Umza Uni happier and better off than when they'd arrived. My ojize. Yes, there is a story there. Weeks later, after I'd started classes and people had finally started to leave me be, opting to simply stare and gossip in silence instead, I ran out of ojize. For days, I'd known it would happen. I'd found a sweet-smelling oil of the same chemical makeup in the market, a black flower that grew in a series of nearby caverns produced the oil. But a similar clay was much harder to find. There was a forest not far from my dorm, across the busy streets just beyond one of the classroom buildings. I'd never seen anyone go into it, but there was a path opening. That evening before dark, I walked in there. I walked fast, ignoring all the stares and grateful when the presence of people tapered off the closer I got to the path entrance. I carried my satchel with my astrolabe, a bag of nuts, my Edan in my hands, cool and small. I squeezed my Edan as I left the road and stepped onto the path. The forest seemed to swallow me within a few steps, and I could no longer see the purpling sky. My skin felt near naked. The layer of ojise I wore was so thin. I frowned, hesitating for a moment. We didn't have such places where I came from, and the denseness of the trees, all the leaves, the small buzzing creatures made me feel like the forest was choking me. But then I looked at the ground. I looked right there at my sandaled feet and found precisely what I needed. I made the ojise that night. I mixed it and then let it sit in the strong sunshine for the next day. I didn't go to class, nor did I eat that day. In the evening I went to the dorm and showered and did that which my people rarely do. I washed with water. As I let the water run through my hair and down my face, I wept. This was all I had left of my homeland, and it was being washed into the runnels that would feed the trees outside my dorm. When I finished, I stood there, away from the running stream of water that flowed from the ceiling. Slowly, I reached up. I touched my hair. The okwoko were soft but firm and slippery with wetness. They touched my back, soft and slick. I shook them, feeling them ojise free for the first time. I shut my eyes and prayed to the seven. I hadn't done this since arriving on the planet. I prayed to my living parents and ancestors. I opened my eyes. It was time to call home, soon. I peeked out of the washing space. I shared the space with five other human students. One of them just happened to be leaving as I peeked out. As soon as he was gone, I grabbed my wrapper and came out. I wrapped it around my waist, and I looked at myself in the large mirror. I looked for a very, very long time. Not at my dark brown skin, but where my hair had been. The okwoko were a soft transparent blue with darker blue dots at their tips. They grew out of my head as if they'd been doing that all my life, so natural looking that I couldn't say they were ugly. They were just a little longer than my hair had been, hanging just past my backside. And they were thick as sizable snakes. There were 10 of them, and I could no longer braid them into my family's coat pattern as I had done with my own hair. I pinched one and felt the pressure. Would they grow like hair? Were they hair? I could ask Goku, but I wasn't ready to ask it anything, not yet. I quickly ran to my room and sat in the sun and let them dry. 10 hours later, when dark finally fell, it was time. I'd bought the container at the market. It was made from the shed exoskeleton of students who sold them for spending money. It was clear like one of Oku's tentacles and dyed red. I'd packed it with the fresh ojise, which now looked thick and ready. I pressed my right index and middle finger together and was about to dig out the first dollop when I hesitated, suddenly incredibly unsure. What if my fingers passed right through it like liquid soap? What if what I'd harvested from the forest wasn't clay at all? What if it was hard like stone? I pulled my hand away and took a deep breath. If I couldn't make ojise here, then I'd have to change. I touched one of my tentacle-like locks and felt a painful pressure in my chest as my mind tried to take me to a place I wasn't ready to go to. I plunged my two fingers into my new concoction and scooped it up. I spread it on my flesh. Then I wept. I went to see Okwu in its dorm. I was still unsure what to call those who lived in this large, gas-filled spherical complex. When you entered, it was just one great space where plants grew on the walls and hung from the ceiling. There were no individual rooms, and people who looked like Okwu in some ways, but different in others, walked across the expansive floor, up the walls, on the ceiling. Somehow, when I came to the front entrance, Okwu would always come within the next few minutes. It would always emit a large plume of gas as it readjusted to the air outside.
"You look well,"
it said as we walked down the walkway. We both loved the walkway because of the winds the warm, clear seawater created as it rushed by below. I smiled. "I feel well."
"When did you make it?"
"Over the last two suns," I said.
"I'm glad,"
it said.
"You were beginning to fade."
It held up an okwoko.
"I was working with a yellow current to use in one of my classmates' body tech,"
it said. "Oh," I said, looking at its burned flesh. We paused, looking down at the rushing waters. The relief I felt at the naturalness, the trueness of the Ojese, immediately started waning. This was the real test. I rubbed some Ojese from my arm, and then took Oku's okoko in my hand. I applied the Ojese, and then let the okoko drop as I held my breath. We walked back to my dorm. My Ojese from Earth had healed Okwu and then the chief. It would heal many others. The Ojese created by my people mixed with my homeland. This was the foundation of the Meduse's respect for me. Now all of it was gone. I was someone else, not even fully Himba anymore. What would Okwu think of me now? When we got to my dorm, we stopped.